It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Infertility is a common problem in the United States, and it's getting to be more of a problem as many women wait longer to try to conceive. About 10% of women in the United States have trouble getting or staying pregnant, and there are many treatments for infertility and alternate ways of starting families. Today, we're going to focus on just one way, surrogacy. This hour, I'll talk with surrogate mothers, a psychologist who works with infertile couples, and a lawyer who specializes in family law. And if surrogacy played a role in your family, we want to hear your story. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. To start us off, Kate Duffus is here. She is 33 weeks pregnant right now, but the baby girl she's carrying will be the daughter of Emily Hovland, who lives in Austin, Texas. And actually, both women are here with me today. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning.
And good morning, Emily. Well, hopefully Emily's on the phone line. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for being here today. And there are a number of different kinds of surrogacy. We'll get into that a little bit later on. But, Kate, you are the biological mother of the child that you're carrying. This is
Correct.
Your egg.
Yep.
Emily, your husband, Travis, is the biological father of this child, right?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And Kate, you offered to do this. You're not a hired surrogate in this case. You offered to do this for Emily and Travis. How did this come about?
I did. It was over the course of 2 years, my boyfriend and I went down to Texas to visit, and we went to a music festival, and we all got together and hung out, and Emily and Travis would talk about how they, you know, were trying to start a family and how they wanted to get pregnant. It just seemed like they were having difficulties, and every time we talked about it, it seemed that they were having more and more difficulties, and it really stood out because when I went down to Texas, it was in May of 2012, and I had actually just had a baby in April of 2012, and I don't know if I had already forgotten childbirth, but I spoke to Sandy, and I said, you know what, like, I just really feel for them because, you know, I can imagine how difficult that would be. And I was like, well, what, you know, I could have a baby for them. Like, can I offer, could we, is that something that could happen? And he's like, well, it's completely up to you. And so, you know, I offered it. And of course they said, well, like, we're not sure. We have to think about it. That's a big thing.
And you mentioned Sandy, your boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
and he and Travis grew up together.
They did. They went to high school together, and they've stayed friends for the entire time afterwards.
And so you came into this friendship, this relationship a little later on.
Yeah.
Right. But Emily, when Kate made this offer to you and Travis, what was your reaction?
Well, I was really relieved, honestly, and surprised that anyone would offer it because I had, you know, been pregnant. I knew how hard it is, not obviously for a full term, but I just couldn't believe that she would even offer that. So I thought at first it was too good to be true, and that of course she'd change her mind, you know, a week later. But she was, in the end, serious because we had gone through what I call like the six-step process where you start out with the champagne and strawberries method and then, you know, IUIs and research international adoption and foster adoption and all of those things. And so by the time I got to Kate, it was like the sixth level.
Wow.
So it's just so amazing that she offered it and we were very excited.
And the idea of surrogacy was something that you didn't think was in your reach because it is usually very expensive, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And you actually, Kate, had been a surrogate mother before. This is your second time as a surrogate mother. And the last time was, I guess, a more traditional arrangement.
Correct.
Where it was a commercial transaction.
Yeah,
you
there
were
was
paid
that aspect.
To be a surrogate mother. In this case, this is entirely altruistic.
Correct. Because they're friends. And Sandy and Travis grew up together. And I look at it more as like doing something for like family members. And so it's a little bit different, this situation.
Now, there are a lot of people listening right now who have been pregnant, who have delivered children and think, oh, my gosh, I can't imagine doing that for someone else, spending 9 months being pregnant. And then, of course, the recovery period to have a child for someone else. Why does this make sense to you?
I try to see it as what would happen if the tables were turned and if I was struggling with infertility and I couldn't have a baby and I had my whole life set up like Emily and Travis do. And they have great jobs and they have a beautiful home and they're just missing that one part. And if that was me and if I was missing that one part and it was no fault of my own, I couldn't, you know, there's nothing I could do about it. To have someone come out and say, like, reach out and say, let me help you. And not expect anything in return. I just think about how amazing that would be if someone did that for me. And so it's very easy for me then to be able to offer that to someone else.
And you have three kids at home.
I do.
9 years old, 6 and 5, is that
correct?
Right? Okay. What do they think of this?
They're really supportive as well. My daughter is 5 and she's the most outspoken about it. She will walk into a room and declare that her mother is having a baby, but oh wait, it's not for us, it's for Emily and Travis. And of course that I have to explain the entire situation to a room of strangers,
right.
But they're really good about it. They think it's really fascinating how big my stomach is, and so they all like pat it and touch it and hug it, and they're really curious about it. Gives a good opportunity to, you know, explain like this is something that we're doing for this family and it's really important, and it's something that it's a good teaching tool for how things go in the world.
Now, you have also been an egg donor in the past. So you have been an egg donor. You have also been a surrogate mother, and you're doing another surrogacy. And all of these children, obviously with egg donation, but mm-hmm. with your surrogacies as well, you are the biological mother of
correct.
These children. You are also the biological mother of 2 of your kids. And these kids will be their half siblings. How do you think about that? Do you think your children will have a relationship with these other kids as they grow into adulthood?
I'm not sure if it'll be as much of a sibling relationship, but it's really helpful to know as far as genetics go in the future if anybody would need anything. I think that's important, as well as I'm sure someday they'll be very curious. And in the surrogacy world, and egg donation especially, there's more anonymous and there's more known donor situations. And I'm really more comfortable with the known donor situation because that way I like to keep those bridges open and I like to watch those kids grow. And it's just part of the process that's really fulfilling for me and being able to show my children, you know, and maybe someday they'll talk and they'll get to know each other, and that'll be fun to see in the future.
Now, Emily, Kate brought up her daughter introducing the idea of surrogacy to everyone. You also have to talk about it with people. You're expecting a child. You're getting ready. You've had baby showers. And a lot of people have questions about it. And I've read that a lot of people have really intimate, rather rude questions about it. What kinds of things do people ask you?
Well, it's funny. I mean, sometimes if you go to like Babies R Us to register and they say, when are you due? And say like August 11th, they're like, what? And it's like, no, that's the date the babies do. And it's sort of this shock and everyone laughs. But then sometimes there are comments like, oh, did your husband have sex with her in front of you? Or just really tacky things that
wow.
I don't know where they get it, you know, from the media or whatnot. Or, you know, oh, is she American or Indian? Because there's lots of Indian surrogacy, and they're like, it's so good that you didn't outsource it. And just I don't know where they come up with these things, but
wow.
we're always shocked that people feel comfortable saying things like that to us. But it is interesting to try to explain it to someone. I went to a high school reunion, and there was someone that was there that was 8 months pregnant, and then I was just saying, well, we're going to have a baby soon. It gets sort of complicated, but people are always interested and excited in the end.
Is your family comfortable with surrogacy and how this is happening?
Yes, they're definitely excited, and they can't believe that Kate offered it. And my mom's mother was actually named Kate, and she's from Iowa, so she was really excited that it came full circle in some ways. But you know, my parents have Skyped with Kate, and they just can't believe that it worked out so well, and they really appreciate Sandy too, just being there and sort of being the person to introduce Kate to us.
And you have had some contact with each other during the pregnancy. Obviously, you living in Texas and Kate living in Iowa, you don't get to see each other that often. But I know that you've gotten to feel the baby kick.
Yes, that's right. She came. Kate came down, I guess it was in early June, and got to feel that. And then we went up for the 20-week to see the gender up to Iowa.
All right. And you are planning to be here for the delivery as well.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, we'll talk more about some of the legal ramifications of this. Obviously, your husband, Travis, is the biological father of this child, and so his name will be on the birth certificate. But how difficult is it for you to adopt the baby?
Well, it's interesting because often, you can get a lawyer to do an adoption, and it's not that hard. But as soon as you mention that there's a surrogacy involved, a lot of the lawyers in Austin won't touch it because they don't feel comfortable with it, or there aren't that many laws around it. And so it kept turning into there were four people. They kept referencing me to each other, and I went in this big, big circle. And so that was a little bit hard. But then they said, well, we don't feel comfortable because it's a different state and it's Iowa. So we basically are going to end up having two lawyers, one that's going to be in Iowa at the beginning, and then one, you know, later, maybe 6 months down the line, would do the second parent adoption here. And with that, I mean, it just makes you nervous because I don't know if you heard in the press recently with the two fathers, and they tried to do the second parent adoption for each other's kids. And not that that would happen to us, but it could. I mean, it's just up to the judge, you know, who's maybe not like us or, you know, doesn't like us. And so you just feel sort of helpless when it comes to the legal part of that.
Insecure. But you are just a few weeks away from becoming a mom, so that must feel very exciting.
Yeah, it's very, very exciting.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your story.
Okay, thank you.
Emily Hovland lives in Austin, Texas. She is expecting a baby girl August 11th. Kate Duffus is here in the studio with us. She is carrying that baby girl. She's also expecting on August 11th. We'll continue our conversation about surrogacy in a moment. Kate is going to stay with us, and we're also going to talk with another woman who has delivered twins as a surrogate mother. I'll talk with a psychologist who counsels infertile couples, and we'll also talk about the legal aspects of surrogacy as well. You are also welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about surrogacy, an alternate way to start a family. Kate Duffus of Davenport is here with me now. She is in her second surrogate pregnancy. So this is her fourth pregnancy overall, but the second time she's carried a child for someone else. And joining the conversation now is Stacy Pollock. She is staff psychologist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, and she works with infertile couples. Hello, Stacy.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for inviting me.
And we've been talking so far about a very specific kind of surrogacy, and that is where the surrogate mother is the biological mother of the child that she is carrying. There is another kind of surrogacy as well. Can you talk us through some of the ways that surrogacy works? Because the mother who carries the children doesn't always, or the child doesn't always, have to be the biological parent.
Yes, that's correct. And usually it's actually more common that either the eggs of the mother, the intended mother, the intended parent, are going to be used in a gestational carrier. That's how I distinguish. I call them a gestational carrier versus a surrogate or a traditional surrogate, okay, with the surrogate being the one who's going to use her own eggs. Because of the legal issues when you use a traditional surrogate, and also some of the psychological issues, it's less common. It's more complicated, more of a complex relationship. And, when Kate was describing kind of being friends with the couple before it, that makes it a lot easier, I think, when you do use a traditional surrogate. You know that person, you have an established relationship. When you're meeting someone for the first time who may carry your baby but who may also be donating an egg to be used for that, you know, to conceive that baby, that makes it a little more challenging.
Right. There is the possibility that since the surrogate is carrying their own child,
right,
they could change their minds.
Absolutely. There's just a lot of things that you can't predict on the front end. When something's an idea versus when it's reality, there's a big difference a lot
right.
of times. So, yes.
Now, you counsel people who are struggling with infertility. Mm-hmm. How often does surrogacy come up?
Well, you know, honestly, because it's often quite expensive, the medical fees, obviously there's legal fees. It is quite an expensive endeavor. And often the people who would get to the point where they would need to use a surrogate or a gestational carrier have already gone through so much fertility treatment of their own. Lots of failed cycles, perhaps, maybe pregnancy losses. Perhaps they've tried using a donor's egg for their own pregnancy. Lots and lots of expenses that it ends up being sometimes a choice that people can't take. They just don't have the resources, unfortunately.
And in the United States in 2012, just under 2,000 babies were born via gestational surrogate. And a gestational mm-hmm. surrogate is someone who's carrying somebody else's egg.
Okay.
Right? So it's not that common. I mean, that's over
right.
the entire United States.
Yes.
How about in Iowa? I mean, there are different laws, and we will talk about the laws later, but mm-hmm. is it less common in Iowa than it is in other places?
You know, I'm not really sure about that. I'm going to say it probably is less common, just thinking about socioeconomic factors and just the availability of clinics that would do that, agencies that would be involved with that, lawyers who would be involved with that. There's not a lot of familiarity. You know, I get contacted to help with gestational surrogacies and things like that. It's often via people outside of the state. I meet with couples that come in from, you know, quite a distance, Florida, New York, different places. Perhaps their carrier is here in the area, so I'm meeting with all of them here in Iowa. But actually, the people who would be paying the bills, who would be going, the intended parents would be located in another state. So I would say it's not that common. We see very few cases at the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics. More is becoming more common as people understand it as a possibility and are willing to make whatever choices they need to make that their possibility. So.
And now, earlier, Emily mentioned some of the outlandish questions that she gets asked when mm-hmm. people learn that a surrogate is carrying her child.
Right.
Is there a stigma to surrogacy?
You know, it's like anything else that people don't know a lot about, anything they're not familiar with, or it seems it's not, they haven't heard of it or known anyone who's gone through it. There's a curiosity and there's a often misunderstanding about what's involved and some of those same sorts of questions that, you know, that Emily and Kate were talking about, I think are quite common because people don't understand it. They don't. It's something that they've never had to fathom themselves. Maybe they've had no problems with fertility themselves. They had babies the usual way, and so they've never even considered it. What could that mean? So I think it's often unintentional when they're rude or just, you know, ask silly things. But and I think it's wonderful when the, you know, the carrier, the surrogate, or the intended mom or dad can kind of educate a little bit about it.
So, well, and Kate, we talked about some of the outlandish questions that Emily gets. How about you? Once your daughter announces to the room that this is a surrogate pregnancy, what kind of responses do you get?
I kind of have a spiel that I go through every single time because it actually comes up a lot. And people in the elevator at work, I also work at University of Iowa, and they'll be like, well, how many more weeks? Have you picked out a name? And sort of not as rude of questions, but still you have to make the decision like, well, do I explain this to this person or do I just say like, oh, four more weeks, it's a girl, don't know the name yet.
Right, right.
Sort of spiel. But usually when Charlotte would make that announcement to the grocery store or to the car dealership, I would say, yep, we're going to have a baby for some friends of mine. They couldn't have a baby on their own. And people are really receptive to it. They say, well, that's really great. They just can't believe that it, like you said, it's something that they had never fathomed before. And you could tell that they have a lot of questions, but, you know, they may hold those back. But I kind of give them the same, you know, yep, we're going to have a baby. They live in Texas. They're friends of ours and they're going to be great parents. We're very excited for them.
I want to bring another mother who has also been through this experience into the conversation. Sarah Long of Ames is with us now. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah.
And I know that you are also a mother yourself. You have twins that are, what, about 2.5 years old now?
Yes, they are.
And then you also decided that you would carry babies as a surrogate mother. You delivered twins again as a surrogate mother. What made you decide that you wanted to do this?
Well, having my own set of twins is relatively overwhelming. And so after I had my boys, I knew that my family was complete and I didn't need to have any more babies in my family. But the utilitarian side of me decided that I was only 26 years old and I could definitely do it again. So, and there were plenty of people out there that would make amazing parents that I could help them.
And how did you go about looking into this? It wasn't like Kate's situation where you had a friend who was in need, but how did you approach this idea?
It was just a Google search. I just Googled surrogacy because I really didn't have any understanding of how you would even go about it. And so I was able to find a lot of really good resources for agencies. And so I ultimately went with an agency because I knew that would help me kind of with the ins and outs of the legal parts of things and the social parts of things that I didn't think that I would be maybe prepared to do on my own.
Right. And you carried babies for a same-sex couple, two
yep.
dads, right?
Yes.
And you did not use your own egg.
Right.
So these were eggs that were donated and then the sperms of both dads. So you actually carried a child for each dad.
Yep. So there were less like twins. I mean, they're twins in that they shared a womb and they have the right. same birthday and they're and all that, but they're more half sisters.
Wow, that's fascinating. And did you understand when you entered into surrogacy that there was a very good chance that you would be carrying multiples?
Yes. Yep. They do a lot to prepare you at the very, very beginning. They educate you a lot on IVF and how that works, and then they educate you a lot on kind of the what your contract is going to look like. And they put in your contract things like how many eggs they can implant and how many rounds you can do and things like that. So I was aware from very, very early on kind of what their plan was and what their plan was with their fertility doctor, because it's ultimately kind of up to them.
Right. And are the fathers also in Iowa?
No, they live in the UK.
All right. So this is a very long distance relationship.
Indeed.
Where did you deliver?
At Mary Greeley in Ames.
All right. And so did the fathers come here for that delivery?
Yes, they did.
Wow. Now, how old were your twins when you carried the second set of twins?
They were two. So I just delivered in January.
All right. Did that give you an opportunity, since it was also a commercial arrangement, did it give you an opportunity that you wouldn't have had in another way? Was this a way to stay home, or how did this work for you?
Well, it was unique in that I did I got some maternity leave, but which everyone assumes that I would maybe stay home with my own children, but I still sent them to daycare. So I actually got a good 8 weeks to myself. It was really, I got a lot done, you know, at my house around, we live on kind of a small hobby farm. And so I really just got to dedicate that time to my recovering my body and kind of recovering my house after being pregnant for so
right.
long with two toddlers.
that would be a challenge. So I was asking Kate just a couple of minutes ago how people respond to her when they learn that she is a surrogate mother. How did people respond to you?
I got a lot of really positive reception. And kind of like Kate was saying that, you know, just because you're pregnant, a lot of people feel like they get to ask you a lot of really personal things just by the nature
right.
of being
and
pregnant.
They also touch you as well.
Exactly. So, and I kind of took that as an invitation. So I would figure, well, if you feel like you get to ask me that, then I get to tell you the whole story.
And were people surprised?
Yeah, they were. I got a lot of really positive responses. People were, they're interested in a lot of those details, like whose egg, whose sperm, whose, where do these babies go at when they're born and where do you have to deliver and all of those details. Those are things that people were really, really interested in knowing.
Did you get negative responses also?
Not not personally in my personal conversations, but after the girls were delivered, it was posted on Mary Greeley's Facebook page. And, of course, Facebook is kind of it's a medium for
people can share their opinions without much culpability.
Indeed, yeah, right. And it's relatively anonymous. So we got some kind of negative feedback there, but it was really general negative feedback. It wasn't anything specific to me or my situation or the dads and the girls or anything like that. And there are people that I didn't know, so it didn't really matter.
Right. And was your pregnancy uncomplicated?
Yep, everything went really smoothly. Except for the fact that it was twins, obviously. They consider that just a complication from the beginning, but it wasn't that complicated.
And how was the recovery? I mean, a lot of us who have been pregnant think about that period recovering. And, of course, you have an infant with you that gives you a great deal of comfort and love, but also needs your care all the time. How was it different recovering from this pregnancy than recovering from your first pregnancy?
Well, I got a lot more opportunity to rest, which was really important when my boys were born. That obviously didn't happen because they needed me a lot. But my boys are only 2.5, so they still needed me a lot. So I didn't feel there was no sense of loss there because I still had children that needed me and needed me to take care of them. And I knew these girls weren't with me, but I knew that they were with people who loved them. They were with their dads. And so it wasn't like I was worried about them. And I was just mostly focused on providing for my family and then just very happy that they were able to be a family together as their new family.
Did you get to know the dads very well?
Yeah. Through the whole process, we Skyped a lot since they obviously live very far away. And since the girls have been born, we stay in communication. We email and send pictures back and forth, and we hope to stay in contact for a long time. We have plans to go out and actually visit them when the boys are a little older.
Is this something you would consider doing again?
Well, kind of like Kate was saying, the further you get away from it, the more you think that it might not have been such a hard thing. So I haven't really made any decisions about that yet, but the agency will take you until you're 35, and a lot of different agencies have a lot of different requirements, so I've got some time to right. do it again.
Now, when you enter into a contract like the one that you were involved with, are there restrictions as far as your diet or exercise habits or vitamins that you need to take, that kind of thing?
Only if the intended parents really want that. Mine didn't. And a lot of times the intended parents aren't so, well, this is a general statement, but a lot of them aren't so worried about that. They really just want their babies. And so, you know, they obviously, what was in my contract was basically that you can't do anything that your doctor doesn't advise, basically, that you just need to follow what your doctor advises, which is just a really easy thing to do. And most pregnant people do anyway.
Right. How about you, Kate? Was there, in your first surrogacy, when you had a contract like this one, were there restrictions on what you could do?
Yeah, there are a few clauses, but like she was saying, they're pretty general. They just outline that it's really up to the doctor and really any decisions are given to the intended parents. So it's not, contracts can range from being very vague to very detailed, and it's really up to the parents.
Right. Now, Stacy, I know you counsel infertile couples through a lot of their processes. Do you also counsel surrogates?
I do, yes. Usually when you, in this sort of scenario, the health psychologist is going to meet with all parties, usually meeting with the intended parents for a session, the surrogate or the carrier for a session, and if there's a spouse or partner, they come as well, since they're a part of the pregnancy. And then I would meet with all four people together in a final session where we'd discuss all the things we discuss separately and make sure everybody's on the same page.
Have you encountered surrogates who find that this process is much more difficult emotionally than they anticipated?
I think for the most part, the carriers and the surrogates are really excited to do it. for the most part, when they get to the point where they're meeting with me, they've thought a lot about it. They've talked with their partner or spouse about it. They've read about it. They feel pretty good about it. They know that there's going to be probably some complexities along the way, things they might not have predicted, but they're enthusiastic and ready to move forward. So that's what I usually find.
This hour, we're talking about surrogacy, and with me now, I have Stacy Pollack, who's a staff psychologist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. She works with infertile couples. Sarah Long is here. She lives in Ames, and she delivered twins as a surrogate mother. And Kate Duffus of Davenport is also here. She is most of the way through her second pregnant as a surrogate mother. You're welcome to join our conversation as well. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Has surrogacy played a role in building your family? Tell your story. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about surrogacy as an alternative way of starting a family. And with me today, I have Kate Duffus of Davenport, who is 33 weeks pregnant right now. And she is carrying a baby girl for a family that lives in Texas. Sarah Long is also with us. She delivered twins as a surrogate mother. Here in the studio, Stacy Pollack, who's a staff psychologist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. She works with infertile couples. And now we're going to bring somebody else into the conversation as well. Carmen Jansen is a West Des Moines lawyer who specializes in family law. Hello, Carmen.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you.
And we've been talking about a little bit about some of the legal arrangements. And right now, Kate is carrying a baby for a couple who live in Texas. Sarah carried two babies for a couple who lived in England. And so these things can get very complicated. Also, laws about surrogacy vary wildly from state to state. In Michigan, surrogacy is banned. What are the laws like in Iowa, Carmen?
Well, it's a rather interesting scheme. The only reference in the Iowa Code is an exemption from the criminal code. The code section is 710.11, saying that surrogacy is not a criminal act and contemplating the selling of children. So it's exempted from that.
So we know it's not illegal, but that doesn't tell you much about how to make it work.
Well, and I guess in my experience, generally, you know, doing contracting with egg donors and eggs and gestational carriers or surrogates, and then as the pregnancy goes along with surrogacy, approaching judges and basically asking that they exercise their discretionary powers to recognize the contract and the intent of all parties. And get appropriate orders that, upon birth, instruct the Department of Health to place the intended parents on the birth certificate if it's 100% their genetic material.
Now, we heard earlier in the hour from Emily, who's the expectant mother who's living in Texas, that when she was looking for a lawyer to help her as a mother who is adopting a child who's being carried by a surrogate in Iowa, that nobody wanted to work with her. Is this something that a lot of lawyers avoid?
There's not a lot of lawyers here in Iowa that practice in this area. I'm not sure exactly how many, but it is a sort of niche in the market, if you will. It has a lot of issues going on that if you don't work with it frequently, I think might intimidate a lot of attorneys, but there's a group of us that have worked together that have, you know, represented all different sides of this at different points in time and have, I think, had quite favorable reception from judges and from the Department of Health.
Now, with an arrangement like Kate and Emily's, where they're good friends and Kate is carrying a baby for people that she loves and cares about, I can imagine that a surrogacy like that could arise without people thinking that they need to get lawyers involved. At what point do you need to get lawyers involved?
Well, my preference is that you get lawyers involved before you start on medication and before you start any procedures so that you can work out all the details. And that includes, you know, compensation, not compensation, reimbursement for out-of-pocket expenses, you know, just a lot of things. And some people with friends or relatives don't want a lot of the legal hassles, you know, more arm's length situations where they don't know each other ahead of time, certainly a little more stringent in that.
Now, we've also talked a little bit about the different kinds of surrogacy, traditional surrogacy, where the egg belongs to the carrier. So that's Kate's surrogacy. We've talked about gestational surrogacies where the egg is donated by someone else. That's what Sarah experienced. As a lawyer, is there more concern about one kind or the other?
My personal concerns, I've only done one where it's a true traditional surrogacy where it's the woman who's pregnant, it's her egg.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, it's more comfortable for people to participate when providing the opportunity to add to their family but not genetically related. But it's certainly a personal preference.
Now, there are stories of surrogacy that seem to really capture the public imagination. There was a story, an experience that was had in Des Moines not that long ago, I guess just a little over a year ago, where a father and a mother, they wanted to have a child, but she had cancer and couldn't conceive, so they had frozen embryos, and her best friend offered to carry one of those embryos, and the mother passed away before the baby was born, but so her biological offspring is here and doing well in the world. That's a story that was written about in the Des Moines Register, and just a lot of people really fell in love with that story, and I think are attracted to sort of the romanticism of the idea of somebody else carrying someone's child out of an act of love or compassion. Carmen, do you think that maybe we romanticize this a little too much?
I guess I will agree with some of the comments that some others have made. I think Stacy was talking about that by the time couples come to this as an alternative, they've been through a lot of different things, and the carriers also, in my experience, have given it a lot of thought. I don't think it's something that is necessarily for everyone, but it is an alternative for people to add to their families or to create families. And for the carriers, you know, I've had people in my office say that, while I couldn't give up my own child for adoption, I can do this to help someone, you know, create a family. And so people kind of have to come to it on their own and typically do. And, you know, it has worked quite well.
Now, I've asked everybody else about some of the negative reactions that some people have to surrogacy. And I need to ask you that question as well, because you have had people who attack you for your role in this.
I participated, I think, about 2 years ago in a panel discussion for attorneys and judges, and some of the members asked some questions of the panel of, can you sleep at night, you know, or how do you sleep at night? And we kind of looked at each other, and I think we all who are familiar with each other sort of said quite well.
Does that surprise you?
The question at the time did kind of surprise me. The way I came to doing this was a very good friend of mine who was an attorney. She's now adopted children because egg donation and stuff did not work, but had a real roller coaster ride of trying to do adoptions. And on three occasions, the biological parent, the mother, decided to keep the child, which is certainly her right. You know, this seems to be smoother because I think Stacy was saying from the beginning, you know, people are on board and wanting the same thing and, you know, reaffirm that multiple times before there is a child, you know, due throughout the process. And then the final chapter, if you will, is, you know, after the birth of the child, of confirmation of it with legal proceedings and a court order and issuing the birth certificate.
Let me ask you, Kate, what, from your perspective, is the hardest part of being a surrogate mother?
I would say the 2 months after conception where I where I can't get out of bed and I'm exhausted and I feel sick all the time. But in all seriousness, I think that it's such a fulfilling process for me, and it's such an amazing feeling when you're in the delivery room and I have my boyfriend to my side and he's got my hand and I've got the parents there, and I just look at them and I say, like, are you ready? Like, are you ready to meet your baby? And that moment, and then like all of the endorphins and everything, and then watching them like see see their face and watching them become a family and watching them like all of those steps. And I just want to do it again. And I wanted to do it again and again and again. Yeah. And it's not feasible to be able to help everyone. And it really, it makes, for every child that's born through surrogacy, like, there are other families who are needy and who don't have that opportunity, whether they can't afford it, or the surrogates or carriers are the minority and there's not enough. And so I just wish that, you know, it wasn't such a time-consuming emotional and physical process, because I'd really like to do it more often. I'd like to be able to help more people.
Now, you talking about your morning sickness kind of surprises me, because I guess I've always had this idea that women who would carry a baby for someone else are the kind of women who would have super easy pregnancies, but that's not the case with you.
No. It's been pretty smooth sailing. The baby's very healthy, and I feel great now, and I'm very cumbersome to move around at work. But you would think in a perfect world that if you were doing a surrogacy, that you would have a painless pregnancy. But I'm starting to feel that anxiety that most people feel when you're heading into the home stretch and you're about ready to, you know, start making birth plans. That, like, this is going to hurt, and I forgot that this hurts, and I'm starting to feel anxious. And yeah. So, but that's just the jitters that anyone gets. But in all reality, it's going to hurt, and the recovery is going to be kind of tough. But in the long run, the positives far outweigh the negatives.
Sarah, what was the hardest part for you?
I would probably have to agree. It's those first 2 months after the embryo transfer, for sure. Yeah.
Did you ever, you were home with toddlers, or not home, you were working and pregnant,
yes,
with toddlers. Did you ever have moments where you felt like it wasn't fair to your boys, that, you know, mommy's not feeling good, mommy's tired and worn out and pregnant, but these aren't for our family?
Maybe a little, but I'm really lucky. I have my parents live just 6 miles away from us, and so Grandma and Grandpa helped a lot. So when Mom wasn't able to help, Grandma was.
That's nice. Stacy, from your perspective, as someone who counsels couples who are the intending parents for these babies, you've worked with surrogates. What do you think the most difficult part of this is?
I think it can be challenging to understand that you do have a mutual goal. Your mutual goal is to produce a child for the intended parents. But also, this is a relationship like any other. There's going to be, you know, ups and downs. There's going to be differences of opinion at times. Simple things that, you know, when I meet with couples, we talk about all sorts of crazy scenarios that I say, these may never play out, but let's imagine that they do. How would you react? And I ask, you know, the carrier the same thing, simply because you can't predict what sorts of things might occur along the way. Could there be a health concern, a need to, if there's a twin or triplet pregnancy, to selectively reduce, if there's fetal anomalies, things like that? You have to think, this is someone I really know, and I've just gotten to know, but I like them, I care about them, but we may think differently about certain things, and so that can be a challenge. I try to encourage people just to imagine the possibilities. How do you handle stress and differences?
To go through almost every possible scenario.
Yeah, it's important to do that.
Mm-hmm. Kate, do you feel that you did that in preparing for these pregnancies?
I feel I like to have a more hands-off approach, to kind of put the ball in the court of the parents, because in the whole surrogacy situation, it seems like the spotlight is on the surrogate. And I like to put the spotlight on the parents because it's going to be their baby and it's their family. And I think that they are the ones who are really the most important in the situation. And they're at the helm of the boat. They've got a lot of decisions to make. And I really defer to them for all of those decisions because in the end, it's their life and their child. And I'm just a helper.
Now, you are in a position where you are not only a surrogate mother, you are also the birth mother to two children who will
Correct.
Be raised by other people. How does that feel? Is that an issue for you? And you keep in touch with the first family. Mm-hmm. You will keep in touch, obviously, with this family. You're very close to them. Watching your biological children grow up?
It's kind of hard to describe because I don't feel as if I'm watching my biological children grow up. I'm watching their children grow up, and I'm watching them experience all those things. And I don't really see those children as my children, perhaps, because I've really given them this gift, and I've given them the baby, and that's their child. And so it's important for me both emotionally to make that distinction, as well as for them who, you know, don't necessarily – you know, have to explain it for the rest of their lives that, well, lives a surrogate or this and that. And it's really important for me to make that distinction from the very beginning. And when I do give birth, I'll ask for a moment, you know, where I'm just alone with the baby, where I'll talk to the baby and you know, have that moment. And that moment is really important to me, whether it's 2 minutes or 3 minutes, that I'm able to kind of put some closure on some of those emotional issues. And then the celebration begins.
What is it like when you, I talked with Sarah about her recovery, when you go home from the hospital and you've just been through this major physical experience, but you're not bringing a baby home?
It's actually going to be a lot easier. Like she was saying, she gets to relax and rejuvenate and sleep a lot and sleep through the night. And and I'll think fondly of Travis and Emily waking up every few hours and having a tiny little girl that just needs them all the time. And I think it's the best situation for both parties. They get to have their newborn, and I get to have my 12 hours of uninterrupted
right.
sleep.
Will your kids get an opportunity to meet this baby after it's born?
Yeah, they'll come up to the hospital and be able to see the baby. My daughter is the most interested in just because she's a girl and she loves babies. But to be honest, the last time I had a surrogacy and the children came up to meet the baby, they were more interested in the bed that moved up and down.
Right.
So if that says anything.
Remote controls are powerful, powerful things. Well, we're nearly out of time. And Kate, I'll let you have the last word since you do have to give these talks in car dealerships and, and elevators. What's the one thing you want people to know about surrogacy?
I think it's really important for people to understand that it's only positivity that comes out of a surrogacy. There's a lot of people who may have negative comments and negative thoughts, but I think it's just from not being able to understand how vast of an important and amazing thing that a surrogacy is, that this void that this family has will be completely filled, and
Kate,
it's probably the best thing.
Thank you yep. so much. Kate Duffus of Davenport. I also spoke with psychologist Stacey Pollack, Sarah Long of Ames, and lawyer of West Des Moines, Carmen Jansen. This is Talk of Iowa.